This one is Reyes Manufo versus BAC Home Loans, case number 60543. Is council ready to proceed?
Madam, Mr. Crosby will be here in a moment. I believe he stepped out. But I'll be doing the opening so we can proceed.
Let's wait for him.
Chief Justice Pickering, Your Honors, may it please the court. My name is Troy Fox, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant and homeowner, Mr. Reyes Manufo. The decision by Judge Mosley was erroneous and should be reversed for three separate independent reasons. First of all, the bank failed to provide the statutorily required documents at the mediation. Specifically, the note which was provided at the mediation was not, in fact, a true and correct copy of the note. In fact, the endorsements necessary to establish standing on behalf of the bank. Secondly, the lender of the mediation and representatives of the bank of the mediation failed to have the necessary authority to negotiate whether a modification is required by the statute. And as I will address more fully, the statute requires that they have both the authority to negotiate a loan modification, not simply show up and run the homeowner through various programs. Third and finally, under the totality of the events that occurred, regarding the inability of the bank to properly address a claimed previous default in their HAMP modification, the bank being unable or unwilling to deviate at all from an arbitrary 25% reduction rule, even in the face of clear evidence that that wasn't appropriate in this case, and the bank's refusal to even discuss exit strategy options when the homeowner indicated he'd be interested, but instead simply handing the homeowner a number and saying, go call them, good luck, showed that in the entirety of circumstances in this case, the lender participated in bad faith. Addressing first point one, the document issue. The note that was provided at mediation, which was testified to by Mr. Crosby and the homeowner, Mr. Reyes Manufo, was not in fact a true and correct copy of the note. And this is concerning because what was later provided at the district court hearing apparently was a true and correct copy and provided endorsements which were attached. The record and the transcript of the hearing shows that the response from the bank of how this happened was that apparently the document supervisor accidentally attached to a certification done under oath the wrong note. And oops, but they fixed it at the time of mediation. But the only evidence that the bank had that they presented the correct note at the mediation was the testimony or the presentation of Ms. Richter, who represented the law firm, not who attended the mediation, but in fact the law firm who was hired to conduct the petition for judicial review. And that her information came from a file that was provided to this law firm. And it's important because, looking to the transcript, the conversation that occurred when Ms. Richter said, no, we provided the right note at mediation, Mr. Crosby said, well, how does she know that? And the court looked at Ms. Richter and said, how do you know that? She said, well, it's based on the notes in the file. I reviewed the file. I have this entire file. And then the court asked a penetrating and important question. Are those the notes of Mr. Ho? Mr. Ho was the bank's representative at the mediation. Ms. Richter's response was that, no, actually they're the notes from the document supervisor. The same document supervisor, who we already know provided the wrong document and attached a certification to the wrong note when sending the documents 10 days in advance to the homeowner and to the mediator.
Let me get this straight. I don't think it's correct. Okay. My understanding was 10 days in advance, it wasn't the correct note. You know, that's
correct.
But at mediation, it was the correct note?
No.
Not the correct.
And that was the dispute. The homeowner and Mr. Crosby, the only two people in the hearing who actually attended the mediation, both indicated that what was presented at mediation was not the correct note.
Counsel, the testimony decided in the record that counsel stated he could not say that he didn't receive a certified copy of the original note at the mediation. That's my understanding of it. Nor did the mediator check the box that it was intended. So my biggest dispute in terms of what counsel testified to.
My understanding, Your Honor, is that what was presented and what was presented in the briefs and what has been argued throughout this case is that what was presented at the mediation was not a true and correct copy of the note. It lacked endorsements. And then Mr. Crosby will be doing the rebuttal. I'm sure he can address more specifically some of those issues. But those were the only people present. And
the mediator was present. Your statement doesn't say that there was a defect in the presentation of the documents.
Absolutely. The mediator statement also doesn't address the various other issues that Mr. Crosby and that the homeowner raised at the mediation. One of the problems we've been having throughout this program is inconsistencies among the mediators about what they're supposed to note and what they're not supposed to note on these statements. And their understandings with regards to what a chain of title is supposed to be. Some mediators are incredibly good at documenting all points. Whether they agree or not, they provide documentation of this was raised by the homeowner, this is the bank, they provide a very clear record. This mediator doesn't, and didn't. There were numerous points that Mr. Crosby had and issues that were raised in mediation, none of which were noted on the mediator statement. In fact, ultimately, the mediator simply indicated that an agreement was reached and didn't address any of those points. And that's one of the problems we've been having, and why the district court, and why I think part of the wisdom of this court in making that a de novo review, is that mediators are inconsistent in what they note and what they don't.
So the evidence at the hearing before Judge Mosley on the issue of the absent note was what?
The evidence was what was presented by Mr. Crosby, Mr. Reyes and Rufo, who both attended the mediation, and the testimony from Ms. Richter, who was reading the file according to the notes from the document supervisor of what apparently was corrected at the mediation. But even Mr. Ho's notes, the actual representative who attended, didn't indicate that which note was provided at the mediation. So, yes, Your
Honor. I'm still troubled by the portion of the transcript that Justice Douglas read to you from, because it appears to me that counsel for Mr. Reyes Marufo, when asked by District Judge Mosley, what's your position on what counsel for the lender just said, was he could not say that he didn't receive a certified copy of the original note at the mediation. Assuming that's what the transcript says, how would you argue this point? I mean, is there no obligation to produce evidence in the form of affidavits? We would like to contest this. We want an evidentiary hearing. Was any of that?
I think an evidentiary hearing was requested. In fact, I believe that we often ask for them. And the truth is, in these district court proceedings, whether or not an evidentiary hearing was given, it is left entirely to the district court judge to decide based on what here at the time of the original presentation.
But if a lawyer is standing there saying, I can't say that we didn't get the right one at the mediation.
Well, and I'm not sure, again, just, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just, that troubles me. If that's the record, then I'm having trouble with that point of view.
I would have to review whether we're talking about the issue of certification or the note itself. Again, a certification was provided, but it's our understanding that what was attached to that, the note that was attached to that certification, wasn't in fact the true and correct copy of the note, because it didn't have the endorsements.
Mr. Fox, if the district court denied your request for an evidentiary hearing, is that an issue on this appeal? Do you raise that as the judge abused his discretion and not granting an evidentiary hearing?
The difficulty, Your Honor, is the standard is unclear on when the judge should or shouldn't issue an evidentiary hearing. Right. And to the extent that this court could verify that issue,
the question was, did you guys raise that? Did you preserve that?
I don't think it was a major point in our brief.
Okay.
Mr. Fox, can I ask you one other question? I know the time is short, and Mr. Crosby is going to do the rebuttal. We're grappling with the issues of strict compliance and substantial compliance. We have the statute, we have the rules amplify the statute, and this comes up all the time. Can you, what's your thoughts on, like, opposing counsel, I'd like to hear her thoughts as well on, when should you apply strict compliance, when should you apply substantial compliance?
And I understand the concern My position is that this court in Bavalian and Pasillas addressed that the requirement on behalf of the bank is strict compliance. And that's because the statute says the beneficiary shall bring. It is their requirement to bring the proper documentation. Some confusion, I think, was called with there was some confusion or some question in Einhorn. This court's decision in Einhorn with regards to when strict compliance becomes absurd compliance. Ideally, I think that the mediator should indicate what was provided and what the information is, and that a more complete record, to the extent that this court or the district court is going to look to that record, and more complete record should be provided.
Do you think that strict compliance is required for an entirely rule-based requirement? For example, 10 days before the mediation, certain things are required by the rules to be provided. But let's say they come to the mediation with everything that was supposed to be provided, but they sent it 9 days before the hearing. Is that something that should shut down the process?
Well, I think the statute is clear is that they have to produce it. The statute calls for these documents to be provided at mediation. And I think strict compliance is required at the mediation.
Right, but what about with the rules that say this has to be done 10 days before? Would you be advocating for substantial compliance, so 9 days is good enough, or are you saying strict compliance with the 10-day requirement?
I would argue that with regards to the rules, to the effect that they are bringing or imposing the statute, I think that requires strict compliance. So in fact, the rules, for example, require a BPO, I think, 60 days in advance. I think those would be substantial compliance, as they're not just statutorily required.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
To quickly hit the other 2 points, the statute requires the lender have authority to negotiate a modification, and here they were unable to do that. They reduced Mr. Pinnacle's income by 25%, even though his income was already based on an average of what his income was, based on the precept of either taxes or for possible fluctuation in the business. But the average already incorporates the fluctuation in the business, and there was no ability to deviate. And then even when Mr. Marufo said, well, potentially I'd be interested in exit strategies, or when I said, would you be interested, he said, maybe, let's talk about it. All they could do is give a number. That clearly is not authority to negotiate.
Wasn't a short sale discussed? He had no interest in doing that, and he said, we wanted a modification?
No.
Or is that completely a misrepresentation of the record?
No, in fact, if you look to the record and you look to the briefs provided, what was said in the discussion was, would you be interested in a short sale? And Mr. Ruffer's counsel responded, we might. They wanted to keep the property. That was their primary goal. But he said, we might. And the response was, well, here's a phone number, call them. And again, I don't think that meets the requirements for having authority to negotiate. Additionally, the record shows the occurrences of what occurred with regards to the limited discussion, the inability to discuss a HAMP and the disagreement, which disqualified Mr. Murphy for various programs. And I think the entirety of it showed the bank participated in bad faith. I reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you. May it please the Court. My name is Kristen Schuler-Heinz, and I represent the respondent in this appeal. I'd like to thank the Court for its courtesy in previously continuing this matter and also opposing counsel. I do sincerely appreciate that. I think that the most important question here to be addressed is the one the Court has posed regarding the struggle between strict and substantial compliance. So I will very, very briefly hit my points, and the fact is that the Court, in reviewing this matter at the lower level, had sufficient evidence before it that there was no abuse of discretion in upholding the findings of the mediator that a certificate should issue. Mr. Crosby's own testimony at the hearing was he doesn't recall what documents were presented. There's no evidence on the record that other than saying we won't accept an 800 number outside to review a short sale, that they ever tried anything else to get to that short sale point. And the record clearly reflects that the petitioner was reviewed for a modification alternative and the reasons why a modification alternative wasn't successful. The issue before the Court as to where strict and where substantial compliance come in is one that's very near and dear to my heart, and you know, I believe that there should be a substantial compliance statute for a number of reasons, mostly which would make my job a lot easier. But when we look at the rules that the court has laid out so far as to what should be strictly complied with and what should be substantially complied with, I think that those make some important strides towards recognizing that the goal of this program is to modify loans where it's appropriate, not to be held up by mere technicalities. We've had a number of instances where certificates to proceed with foreclosure are denied in cases where there's no hope of the borrower retaining the home and they have no desire whatsoever to short sell the home, but because the BPO is dated one day too old or is missing some minor technical detail or documents were not exchanged, that now we're not going to get the certificate of mediation completion, so we have to start over, which is a cost to the state of Nevada, the lender, and the community itself. So when we're looking at this, we have to look at what the goals of the program are, and that is to help the struggling homeowner.
What's the standard in terms of burden of proof? I mean, we have here a petition for judicial review that alleges that a complete certified copy of the note was not brought to the mediation. And you come in, I understand there's a switch of firms, but the lawyer then shows up, the new lawyer shows up at the hearing and says, that's not true. I have in my file notes from a predecessor counsel that suggest indeed the certified copy was brought. Ideally, you would have had an affidavit to that effect from the original counsel who would have been a competent attester because he or she, whoever it was, could say, I have personal knowledge, I was there, I brought it, I gave it to them, here it is. And instead we have counsel representations orally in district court, and I understand Mr. Fox's point that how do we know what home knew or what the lawyer in court knew when we all know that that lawyer wasn't there. So it would make it much simpler, would you not agree, if people would put in an affidavit that attests what was and wasn't produced, right?
Yes.
And since that didn't occur, on whom does that burden lie, and is a lawyer representation to the court sufficient?
I think a lawyer representation to the court is sufficient, because what we have here is a preponderance of the evidence. If you just take the simple issue of the promissory note, whether or not it was a certified copy, we have the mediator's statement, which finds no deficiency in the certification of the note that was presented. Number one. We have Mr. Crosby's own testimony, who was present at the mediation, which says they might have done it. I don't recall ever seeing it. And then we have the certified copy of the note that was presented with the petition for judicial review itself, with the response. There is a certification of the promissory note itself. There's a certification dated the same day of each endorsement of the promissory note. So there were actually four separate certifications.